Welcome to the Leave No Doubt podcast. I'm so excited to welcome to the pod our new sponsors, Connexion Technologies. A market leader in business-to-business tools, ranging from business mobile, hosted telephony, and fixed line services. Head over to their website at www.connection-technologies.co.uk, fill in their web inquiry form, and find out how Connexion Technologies can help your business. Welcome to Leave No Doubt. I've been joined by my guest today, Matty Taylor. Matty, how are you doing, mate?
Yeah, all good, mate. All good. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Yeah, thank you for obviously entertaining me in your house. I really appreciate it. I've been trying to get you for a while. It's nice that obviously that we're going to be able to sit down. I know a lot of people listening to this will most likely be listening for a specific period of time in your career, which we will get onto. But to get started, you have obviously had a very interesting career, like a journey that sort of had many highs and lows. To get started, I'm well aware that, you know, people will be waiting for us to address that move. But as I said, we will get there. But you started your career actually at Oxford, where you are now. I'm not sure a lot of people probably know that. As a young 18-year-old in 2008, me and you are the same age. So back when you were 18, you made a handful of appearances, didn't you, for the first team, coming off the bench and stuff. And as we sit here right now, we know that you are capable of playing in the Championship. We know that you're capable of scoring many goals at League One. What do you think it was about you at 18, at that age at Oxford at the time, that maybe you weren't ready to excel as much as you are now?
That is a really, really good and good question. And I think there's a lot of reasons, to be fair. One first thing would probably be the physicality of the game and just competing at that level. Obviously, I know I'm not didn't grow so too much after that, but yeah, it was sort of the more men's football I played, I just knew how to get the most out of my body. Obviously, coming up against defenders the size like of you, 6'3", 6'4", they're trying to win every ball, get in front of you, smash you all over the place. And yeah, you just learn the little things where you know when to buy free kicks, you know how to bump defenders, how to sort of roll them and just use all of my strength, weight and advantages to get that half a yard in the box and get a shot off and get a goal. And I just, obviously any young player, it's difficult. You need games, you need to get that experience. And at 18 I was very raw, and then obviously the non-league circuit helped me out massively. And that's really when I sort of learned my trade and could then take it back into the pro game eventually.
We hear that word quite a bit, mate. And I've had a conversation recently that's been released. This might get released sometime after, but with a guy called Harry Cornick, who is playing for Luton now, super successful, scores a lot of goals, creates a lot of goals. But at the time when he was younger, as an 18-year-old, he had never been in an academy. He, you know, he tells a story of how he was working in McDonald's and got sacked from his McDonald's job, which allowed him to be involved in Christchurch's first team, which is like a Wessex League, sort of step seven of National League, of the non-league. And he uses the word like, I was raw. Like when you say raw, because I'm interested to know that you're talking about physical attributes as to why maybe you didn't fulfill potential that you had at 18. But if you were to go back now, knowing what you do, what would you do as a 16, 17, 18-year-old, do you think that would allow you to play at that high level that you do now earlier?
I think I probably would have done a lot more gym work. Having been released at 16, sort of, that was sort of when the scholars sort of do lots and lots more gym work because you're in full-time, aren't you? So I missed sort of that sort of year or year and a half of sort of really maybe embedding those sort of like movements and gym work in me.
So when you left school, you weren't in a, you didn't do a scholarship, you didn't do an academy?
No, they released Oxford. They Oxford released me at 16. And I went to play men's football. And then weirdly enough, they must have kept their eye on me and brought me back at 17, and that's when I made my first team debut. So I got released to go into the scholarship at 16, and then first team debut a year and a bit later.
I'm disappointed with that. It's funny, all the reading that I do about people online and trying to research, I've got, obviously Matty made his debut as an 18-year-old at Oxford. I never really knew that you left school, were released, went and played men's football and then went back into that. That must have been a tricky couple of years. Like, did you, once you were released post-school, you know, I can relate to that, was released by Portsmouth and signed for Bournemouth. So I still did an academy, but it was much different. You, without doing that, those, that sort of full-time football once you leave school, did you think that the dream of playing was over?
Yeah, I was heartbroken, to be fair. Been in academy since I was 8, all the way to 16. And it did cut me deep, to be fair. And went and did a college course for sort of, a year and a bit. And then there's slight connections with through some of the coaches with Oxford. So I think they was kind of keeping their eye on me a bit. So did the college course, still doing playing plenty of football, you're still improving your skills day in, day out. So it's similar to sort of youth team football, but obviously a lower standard. Obviously playing men's football on a Saturday. They just sort of give me a call. They actually offered me a trial. At 17, I thought, well, I've been here 8 years, you know, I think you know what I'm about. But spoke to my family, and it was a no lose for me because I was enjoying my college course. And if I went there for a few weeks and they said no, I was in the exact same position. So I took it as a bit of a free hit, went there and did really well, to be fair. And then just stayed on, and I ended up getting like a second year scholar and a year pro. I was obviously buzzing and it worked out, but then they released me again at obviously 19, and then I fell into non-league, and that's really sort of when you're playing every week, and really what I was touching about before, like honing your skills, and just started enjoying my football again. Once you start enjoying it, you know, you start performing a bit better, and then it's the rest of history, isn't it?
A lot of the guys I speak to are obviously successful, like successful footballers, hence the reason why I'm sort of sat across the table from you now, really, mate. The thing that you all have in common is that you've all been able to get over hardships and speed bumps that have come your way, right? So it's news to me that you were released as a 16-year-old. I thought naturally, obviously looking online, that you'd have done your youth team with Oxford and come straight from school. So you've managed to get over that. And the word I've sort of used for the beginning of this conversation is refocused. And it seems that you've actually done that more so than I was aware of. You've been able to refocus after being released as a 16-year-old. You've been able to refocus as a 19-year-old, which is a really important part of a lot of players' careers, sort of make or breaks you, I suppose, especially these days where there's so many players that are playing from the age of 16 to 21. What do you think it was about you, and could you give advice to other people who maybe are going through something similar where they're being released from first teams or released from youth teams, and they need to go out into something that's perceived as maybe a hit to the ego, or we've just talking about it off camera, as that sort of non-league circuit is a bit of an ego burster, right? It's sort of like, oh, I'm a non-league player, and it can be perceived from the outside as being a negative, but you managed to sort of do that and use it to your advantage. How were you able to do that?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. Obviously, I know he's talking off air, but when you're a young player and you go on loan to the local sort of non-league sides, I think you have you carry a bit of arrogance where you think you're the best player, when really you don't have a clue what careers they've had, where they've been. They've played 300, 400, 500 games. And you go there sort of just very naive. And I found out on a couple of my early loans to local sides. And it shocks you. You get there and believe it or not, these players are really good because they've had really good careers and played a lot of games. But you think because you're coming on loan from wherever, that you maybe don't even have to give 100%, and after the first game you'll be in for a big shock. So I think that definitely happened. And then Just as soon as I started playing more games, I started knowing what it was about. You're trying to help players win games, and it's livelihoods. Do you know what I mean? Whereas obviously you're a young lad on loan, you're a bit naive to the world anyway. You won't sort of have mortgages to pay, kids to feed and stuff. So that gets drummed into you very quick, and you learn that this game's, you need to get the points. You need to win games. It doesn't necessarily matter how well you play, just get the win. And that's kind of like been instilled in me. And that's probably where sort of I see the game. Like, I want to get results done over a little bit more over sort of performance base at times. But yeah, that's just the industry. And no, obviously getting released, it was heartbreaking, but it did definitely give me the fire like inside me, and it fueled me to basically prove people wrong. And yes, I still have that in me now, and I just want to keep proving the people wrong, and score as many goals as I can, many appearances as I can, and hopefully, yeah, look back on one day and be like, yeah, I've done all right.
I'm sure you will be able to, mate. And that mindset, I think most guys who play at any sort of level, or at least full time, can sort of relate to that mindset of that they've overcome something that sort of builds that fire in them, right? That they never really lose. Like, I'm, 14 years post being released by Portsmouth, but it still fuels me to be like, oh, I still want to achieve. I still, like, I've been given an opportunity to play in it, and it sort of drives me to be able to keep doing that. I'm interested in your mindset there. One of the things that you just said was to score goals, right? And even though you are obviously a fantastic footballer, super talented, your outstanding attribute is your ability to find the net, which in my opinion is probably the hardest thing to do in the game. How did you build your, this is probably a question most so for strikers now, really, but any player really who has an obsession with a certain aspect of the game. Say it's defenders who wanted to defend the goal, but obviously your desire has been to score for your whole life, really. How did you develop that mentality and that obsession with scoring goals, and how much of a focus was scoring for you, you know, on entering the pitch for most match days?
From as a kid or as older, or
whenever, like you tell me, like, when did that hunger for goals really start?
Just as long as I remember, to be honest. Remember the early years when I was joining. I started about under sevens for Kidlington, and I think they put you into positions by then. And yeah, just loved scoring goals. And then as obviously time went on and grew up, stuck to playing up front. I've always played up front. And yeah, just the older you get, you're watching sort of your idols and your heroes on TV, and you're just trying to pick up little bits and bobs, and then going obviously into sort of watching professionals do it, just the work they put in, the sessions they put in, then you can replicate it, you can copy theirs, and put it into your practice, and it's just repetition. And then when you get that, you might only get one moment, one chance. But it's kind of drummed into you, drilled into you. And you just have like a thought process of, I don't know, when I get a chance now, I'll have sort of a split second and have three different finishes flash in my head. It's a bit strange, really. And you just pick one, and you're like, right, you kind of have in order, which is like, you think is right, sort of thing. And then, yeah, it's just instinct, really. You just pick it. And obviously, yeah, they don't all go in. Some go in. But that's what keepers are in there for. Sometimes you get a connection wrong. But I think if you know deep down you made the right decision, you can hold your hand and be like, oh, I couldn't have done any more. It's when you're not making them right decisions. Using your right technique and body shapes and stuff like that, then when you've come off the pitch, you're disappointed in yourself because you know you could have done better. But yeah, I pick up little bits and bobs from all the coaches and players and people I speak to and play football with. So yes, you're like a sponge, really. And I use like Marcus Stewart as an example. I think he said to me at Bristol Rovers about my heading was awful at the time, and he did a lot of work with me from crosses and sort of getting my shoulders in line with where I wanted the ball to go, and that still comes in my head as a cross is going in. So like thinking, where can my shoulders be? And I've got Marcus up here, like, and but yeah, no, it's little things like that, and they just stay with you. And if you know that they've worked for you, you'll keep using them, because obviously everyone's different, right? So yeah, if they work for you, then stick at it. And obviously it's just repeating the process constantly, and then it just becomes natural.
I'll make sure Stewie listens to that. I'll send him this. And you know, obviously the pair of us are playing in that game in the summer, and you know, he's obviously going through a tough time, but Stewie actually had that impression on a lot of people. Those, you know, I know Ellis talks about information that he used to give him. Rory, all the strikers from that era of Bristol Rovers have all got little bits that Stewie had given him. You're saying there that, you know, you've been like a sponge and trying to absorb information from people across your career as to ultimately how you can improve and to score more goals, right? But not everybody is like that. What do you think, how much of a benefit is having a mindset like that, where you are a sponge and you are open to people's opinions and you are open to learning?
I mean, it definitely helps. Everyone's way of learning is different. So some people might learn better like that, might be a visual learner, might be reading and writing. There's obviously different ways to learn and process things that you have learned. So for me, that worked. For the next person, it might not, if that makes sense. So you just need to figure out and find a way that you can sort of draw back on all the things you have learned and experiences in the moments that you need to. And yeah, I've been thankful enough that you just see it so many times. You just end up doing the right technique or the right finish or the right run. And obviously it's a game of football, so it's random, right? But you have to build connections with your midfielders, your wingers, your other strike partners, fullbacks, defenders, and it's like a piece of a puzzle, really, and you're like the final piece in the jigsaw, and then it's down to you to put it in the net, isn't it? Which is obviously a hard part.
See, so talk to me then about, you leave Oxford as a 19-year-old, and you signed for North Lee of, you know, in, I've got it written down here, what, the Southern League, South and West, but I'm not sure what sort of level that was. What's that to the National League? Maybe two below, maybe?
Three
below the National League. So you go and play in that league and you start slapping the net like a ridiculous amount of times. I think, you know, I've got down here, he scored 80 times in two seasons, which is pretty insane, really. What happened during that time to you? Like, how, I'm interested to know what your football lifestyle was like. Were you just turning up and playing and obviously excelling quite a lot? Or was there a real focus on your game and how to score goals? How did it make you feel? And was your ambition to, and I'm putting a lot on you here, was your ambition during that time to still play full time and professionally?
Yeah. So obviously my initial, the reason obviously I went there was obviously been released. My initial thought process was, right, I'm going to go play football here for a year, do as well as I can with an eye on getting back into football. That was ultimately my first thought. I was down in the dumps again, being released again, for the second time. It's like double hit. So the manager there, Gigi, he was amazing with me. Literally thinking back now, he brought my confidence levels right up, brought me on as a man, and, encouraged me to go on the pitch and just enjoy my football, just express myself, took all the pressure off me, all the weight off my shoulders, and just said, look, enjoy your football. You're going to play all the time, get loads of chances, and just do what you do, score goals. I know you'll score loads. And that just eased me, made me relax, made me take my mind off being released. There was a lot of good, a few older heads there as well. Obviously, I've played with Chrissy Allen, who ended up coaching me. He was about 37 at the time. Dodsey was centre back, sort of got hold of me. I had some good wingers around me, like Ben Reardon and stuff. And they just got me used to being in a proper team, the way it was run, like the banter and everything. And then they just, yeah, just, they, they, they could probably see I had a talent of scoring goals, and they just kept feeding me the ball. And as the first season grew, my confidence kept growing and growing. And yeah, obviously by the end of that season, I'd scored loads of goals and was kind of thought, right, that's enough, really. I should be sort of earning a move here, or where's my path taking me? But on the same time, on the human level, I was like, I'm loving my football so much. I'm performing so well because I'm happy. Then I ended up did the same for another year, and just did the same. And I learned, honestly, so much in those 2 years. Playing men's football at such a young age, just even Saturday, Tuesday. I know they kind of sort of drip feed them in a little bit now, but yeah, it was just amazing 2 years. And I grew as obviously a footballer and as a person back then, and it's helped me to where I am now, really.
So was that a conscious decision after that first season? Could you have moved on? And how much of a challenge was it for you to figure out, like, actually, no, I'm enjoying this level so much, I'm going to continue doing this over possibly moving on?
Yeah, there was professional teams watching, a few conference prem teams watching, and then like local, so like league above and stuff like that. And I had a couple of conversations, but yeah, I just didn't feel right. And I trusted the manager, he trusted me, loved my teammates, loved the football, loved scoring goals, and it just didn't seem right. Wanted to stay, wanted to carry on. And yeah, it was ultimately the right decision for me as a player and me as a person. Because I think sometimes you can maybe go too soon and almost take one step back to then go forward again. And I didn't want that to happen. So mate, you can probably argue, given the fact that I'd been released and had sort of those sort of down times, that I didn't want that to happen again, and like that rejection maybe. So wanted to stay on like an upward trajectory and stay happy and keep the performances high. And then ultimately I wasn't thinking about that. It was just turning up to a game, winning the game. How many can I score? Going in the bar afterwards, going home happy. And yeah, it's great.
So at what point in that second season did moving on become one of a realistic ambition first, and then second, a realistic possibility?
I was like neck and neck with someone for like the golden boot. And like the other lads were like sort of making a big thing of it. So I was just striving to beat the other guy. And then my manager said, oh, there's this club down to watch today, this club and stuff. And then in the end, I just said, oh, I don't even want to know. Just there's no point unless like they're coming to you and saying they want me to join. There's no point because it'll just distract me. So yeah, I just carried on trying to play as well as I can, knowing that there was people at games and stuff. And that was probably the first time thinking back then to sort of how it is sort of now in professional world, especially in transfer windows when people are watching and you can potentially get moves and stuff. So there's almost added pressure on you to perform. So it was thinking back, it was a good way to sort of deal with that because I knew they were there.
And how did you deal with that?
Well, the best way for me to deal with it is to not think that they are there. So when they haven't been there and I know they've not been there, I've been scoring goals. There's a reason why they are there, because they're interested in seeing how you're playing and you're doing something right. So just try and carry on performing at the level you are. Don't do anything out the ordinary, because they've done their research already and they're coming to watch you do what you're good at. So whether that be obviously scoring goals, running channels, whatever it be, they're there for that. So just show them that, rather than show you can drop in and start spraying diags, which they might be like, that's not what we've come to see. So yeah, literally keep performing to the same level. And then obviously there's luck in football, right? So you need someone to think you're the right player for them, and then obviously if that gets to that point, then you need to discuss if that's the right club for you. So that's where that sort of season ended. I think I had a trial at Newport at the end of that season, and I went there and we did like a practice match. So Newport was in conference then, did a practice match, and I think I scored two and assisted one, and my side won 3-1. And so that gave me more confidence, because my issue was like the levels is a step up so much, and that gave me confidence that I could compete at the same level as that. That makes sense. But then, yeah, then I did re-sign, actually, weirdly, for Northleigh, because it just didn't feel right. Newport offered me a contract, didn't feel right, sort of maybe wanted to stay because I was happy and stuff, coming back to that again. Had a really good pre-season, I think I scored 10. And then Forest Green come down and watched, and it was a little bit closer. I could travel from home and stuff, and it was just a better fit, really. So yeah, then I went on to Forest Green.
I'm really interested, Matty, into that process of you saying that it was the first time that you started to understand pressure, and that there was pressure on you to perform, and how you were able to deal with that by almost ignoring that those people were there, right? And you know, I can relate to that, not necessarily through interest, because nobody was ever interested in me, but trying to almost ignore outsourcing stuff would always help me to perform as best as I possibly could. How difficult was it for you to, when there was a lot of noise about you, obviously scoring goals and teams interested in you, I can imagine you had agents, you know, on your case, and if your manager was telling you, oh, this club's going to be here today or not, like, how were you able to build your opinion in terms of, like, I don't want to know that, like, that I don't deal well with having that information on my shoulders?
How did I deal with that?
Yeah.
I definitely think it affected me at that age. And put extra pressure on me to perform, which I didn't need at that age and at that time.
So when you say that, what do you mean? What did you play differently? Did you not perform as well?
Sometimes I wouldn't sleep as well, to be fair, the night before. So I find out whatever from an agent or from a manager or from a player, whoever. X teams coming down to watch or whatever. And then, yeah, the night before, I would just sort of, maybe it was a bit like anxiety and in terms of thinking, God, I need to be so good tomorrow, when how I am now and having all the experience I have now. And obviously, like you said, if you could tell your 19, 20, 21 year old self now, then might sort of relieve that pressure, but when you're in it and in the moment, it's hard to think like that because you've not had the experience. But yeah, I mean, we've probably all had days where they're big games anyway, and that's what we want to play in, but the build-up is, it's just irrelevant, isn't it? All that matters is you go on the pitch. I'm sure you've had days where you feel absolutely horrendous and you've had best game of your life, probably felt amazing and played terrible, so it means absolutely nothing. But the footballer's mind is, especially if it's an important game, you wake up and you're like, need to have a good breakfast. Do you know what I mean? I need to do a walk at this time. And we're kind of drilled to do these things. And if you miss them, you almost half look for an excuse a little bit. And I know footballers, they all think like that, don't they? So, well, most of them. So it's, yeah. From an early age, it's tough, and you see obviously all these huge players play on the Premiership, and some of them are just so young at that age, and I just think they almost need a bit of help, bit of leeway, because know what I went through, but I didn't do it under the spotlight, so I can only imagine what it's like for like the Prem boys.
So I'm asking you, mate, this is almost, you know, kind of Premier League young players listen to this podcast, but I'm the reason why I'm getting your opinion for that, for the lads who do watch, is dealing with, you've dealt with interest almost your whole career, really, from almost the moment that you start playing for North Lee and start scoring goals. People are interested in you, and especially as a striker, it's sort of that position that everybody wants someone who's going to score goals. So you're always in people's mouths. You're always sort of like being spoken to by agents, being spoken to by different managers. And you've managed to deal with that pretty well along your career. And you're sort of explaining to me that the way you've managed to deal with that quite well is by completely ignoring it. I'm interested to know, obviously, because that was a super successful time in your career. And I'm fast forwarding a little bit now, because you spent 4 years at Forest Green.
Three years. Recent, yeah.
The 3 years you spent at Forest Green, they're a good National League club, right? They were always sort of pushing at the top of the table. And for whatever reason, in that third season, I'm not saying your form dipped, but you weren't scoring as many goals as what you previously had done. You end up going to Chester in January, scoring 6 times in 7 games. Forest Green call you back. And for whatever reason, again, then you probably don't go on and score as many goals for Forest Green as you possibly wanted to. And at the end of that season, instead of being in a position where you're most likely thinking like, oh, all these teams want me, you might have been in a different headspace where you start to question, oh, who wants me, kind of thing. Can you explain to me the difference that it made you feel going from everybody's interested in me to, oh, I'm not too sure if anybody's going to want to take me?
Yeah, it's interesting because, yeah, I did, I wasn't getting the goals at Forest Green, almost got that month at Chester sort of revitalised me, to be honest, and it was similar to probably when I started at North Lee, just the manager sort of knowing what to say to me, knowing how to get the best out of me, and playing to my strengths, ultimately, because if you're playing to people's strengths, then you're going to get them to perform better. In that Forest Green side, in that third season, it wasn't playing to my strengths. I played right midfield of a 4-1 game, believe it or not, away at Luton. So, you just kind of get a feel that this isn't, I need to move on here, this isn't conducive for me, to team sport, but it's individualized as well when you're sorting your contracts out and stuff like that. And obviously you want to have the best career you can and move up as far as you can. So yeah, that moment when I was out of contract, I knew I didn't want to stay at Forest Green that season because the football didn't suit me. Wasn't enjoying it towards the end, and I was looking for a fresh start, but yeah, the first time I hadn't had the goals behind me and that sort of confidence behind me for stats wise, where I knew I was going to get, it was a bit like you said, I was a bit unsure. I had a few sort of sniffs here and there when I've had a few meetings, but yeah, it was a flip of a coin, really. Could have gone either way, could have ended up anywhere, really. But yeah, thankfully I chose sort of, I'm quite a good choice. If I sit down and sort of go through everything, I'm quite a good sort of person that can make the right choice. My mum's always said it to me. She's like, look, you'll make the right choice. Just have a think. And they just sort of leave it to me. So, I'll speak to whoever I need to speak to for any advice if I need to, but generally I just sort of take in all the opinions of family and friends and then just sort of sit and have a think on my own and go for a decision. But yeah, I turned down one League Two club because I think I was going to be sort of third, fourth choice striker. And even though I was desperate to play a league game at that point, when I met Daryl and Marcus, I just remember walking in the room at Rovers, and firstly I was a bit starstruck by Stewie because I knew who he was straight away. And then obviously sitting down and chatting to them both, they just it was literally the same feeling as I got from Chester, got from North Lee. Made me feel so welcoming, and not only just told me what I wanted to hear, but they've backed it up and they followed it. And I just think I knew it was, after sitting there for 5 minutes and I was there nearly an hour, I just knew it was the place I wanted to sign. And as soon as I left there, I just got on the phone to my agent and was like, right, sort a deal out, let's go. And then, yeah, started there, and thankfully I did.
Before we get into your Rovers stuff, mate, I'm really interested at this point to ask you, really, you're small in stature, you know, you use your body super well, but you're obviously not a massive guy. You're playing in a national league at a time that wasn't really as it is now, like we've just been talking about this county before, like who play super football. There's a lot of teams now obviously play with certain styles in the national league, but it wasn't very common. You know, we're going back, what, 8 years probably. How were you able to get to a point where you were able to, you know, to score so many goals at national league level, where it was obviously a super difficult league, physical for you? What were you doing in training? Like, how was your football lifestyle? Like, I'm interested for strikers to listen to this who maybe play at levels that are difficult football games, like it's a difficult style of play, how they can be successful and how are you managing to do that?
So for Rovers, you mean?
Well, Forest Green as well.
Forest Green, yeah. Yeah, so Forest Green was, it taught me so much, but I didn't get the goals I'd have liked to. So I think previous to that, it was, I'm a goal scorer. That's all I thought about. Always played in the two up front, went to Forest Green. We played 4-3-3. I played on sort of either side. So it weren't wingers. It was like an inside forward. That was back when I could run a bit quicker. But then I was sort of the lone striker, and it was getting the balance right between sort of fox in the box / target man, bringing the midfield into play because of how we played. We played through the lines and played through the thirds. So I think I kind of sacrificed goals for myself at that stage. And I think the attacking mid that year got 18. So it was like, that was our main source of goals. I was sort of getting like 10s and 11s.
It was at the time Noble. Is it Noble?
No, Jan Klukowski.
Right. It was a good team, that Forest Green team, wasn't it?
Yeah, we should have done a lot better, to be fair. But it was a young side, and sometimes you need a couple of older heads, don't you, to steer you to where you want to go. But yeah, it was. I learned so much in sort of my hold up play, and linking up and different positions in of where strikers. So I've kind of adapted my game a little bit, so I can just be a poacher, just keep me there, keep me away from the ball and just keep me in a box. I can come feet and deep and people run beyond you, can drift out wide, can do like channels and stuff. And it just taught me a lot more to being a striker than just what I was done previously. But it was detriment to the goals, which I thought, right, it's goals. That's your drug, right, isn't it? That's your formula. That's what you want to achieve in a game of football, winning a goal is a perfect weekend. So at this it taught me so much, and obviously I'm thankful because it's made me a better player today. But at the time, yeah, if I'd have gone into Forest Green's team first year and scored 20, I might have got a move quicker. But would I have been a better player? Probably not. So it's a bit of like, I'm buzzing it happened, and I'm so grateful for my whole career, to be honest. But that definitely made me a better player and a better striker in all the other aspects I wasn't so great at.
See, like, you're able to sit here now and say that period of time was really important for your development, but I can't imagine at the time you were happy about playing in wide areas and not really scoring goals. So how you reflect on it quite well now that it's obviously managed to get your game to a point where you're able to play higher. But at the time, how difficult was it for you to sacrifice, and again, this is probably a point for strikers, your selfish needs to score goals and to ultimately get out of the game what you are in it for, and to be a teammate, to be a team player, and to play a role that a manager is asking you to play that you might not think if he asked you was your best role?
Yeah, I mean, it's a team sport, so if the team's winning, you're winning. So that's the way you have to look at it. But then there's a fine line, a fine balance, as soon as the team's not winning and the striker's not scoring, you're the first person to be shot down. So it's a fine line. You need to try and find a good balance. When you're winning, you could be scoring no goals and it doesn't matter because everyone's buzzing. But you obviously want to be chipping in and doing a bit of both. So it's a fine line, but yeah, you need to just sort of build relationships with your teammates. They need to know your strengths, know how you score goals. And then I think once you've had those chats and they're sort of, if you can see that they're putting the balls you want, crosses you want, through balls, whatever your strength is, and you can see them doing that, then you're more than happy to do the stuff that they want you to do in that side to help them defend from the front, whatever that may be. And that's just your teammates. And then obviously the other tricky combo is down to whatever your manager thinks, because that's what goes, to be honest. And if he doesn't like what you're doing, then you won't be playing. If he does, then you keep playing. So, but at the same time, you do need, it's not just a coaching manual, is it? So you're the one on the pitch, you're the one making the decisions. He can't make them all for you. They just give you sort of a template of what they want to do, and then it's down to you again. But no, it's difficult because you want to play a game, you want to score every game, and that's the mindset you should go into a game as a striker, I think. But obviously we all know, unless you're Ronaldo or Messi, that's not going to happen.
I think that's great advice, mate. Something that, you know, I want to highlight and really make a note of for people to take away is that conversations, something that I believe as well, conversations with your teammates, obviously within your manager's structure, but conversation with your teammates about what they want to do, how that can benefit you, what can you do to benefit them, how can you link together to be successful ultimately, if it's with a wide man and you're a striker, or maybe you're a fullback and the wide man in front of you, or both centre backs and the goalkeeper. I cannot ever understand why people aren't having more conversations with one another, not just on the pitch, like in the middle of a game, but before and after games, about like, what do you want from me? Like, what do you need from me? You know, you're asking a wide man, look, when you're in this position, put the ball in there, I'll make that run. Like, it's all, everything, even though football is random, it becomes a lot more controlled in terms of you can really, like, your gambling now doesn't become 100% gamble, it becomes a 50% gamble, because you know what he's trying to do and what you're trying to do. And I've never really understood people who aren't having those sort of conversations. How important do you think it has been for you to build those relationships with your teammates that ultimately are feeding you the chances to score goals?
Yeah, no, I think they're huge, to be honest. And I think you definitely get better at it as you get older. I think my Forest Green days, maybe I wasn't that good at those conversations, or being speaking up in meetings and stuff and saying the bits I would probably say now. It was more just, I just wanted to get on with my teammates, have a laugh, you go on the pitch, do well, whatever. But obviously now, the conversations I have at Oxford now, we've had new wide men this year, new fullbacks this year, and I think those are really important positions for the way I want to play. And I'm speaking to them weekly, and various different players, about the runs I want, when I want the ball, where I'm going to be in this run, what do they think when they get into that zone? What do they think the right ball is, or right option? And it is a conversation. It's not just sort of saying, I want you to put it here, because that's just not the type. I am a goal scorer. I am greedy in that respect, but I'm a team player, and I want to know people's thoughts as well. And maybe that's comes of age as well. But yeah, it's just interesting to know what they're thinking on the pitch as well. And you kind of want to come to some arrangement or agreement, or if I'm here, this is where I'm going to put it. Or if I'm further up, I'm going to put it here. And then, like you said, it's not 100% gamble. It's sort of a 50-50, a 60-40. And then you repeat that 100 times, you're getting more chances, which ultimately will lead to more goals, hopefully. But yeah, I mean, the turnover of players in any team now is quite high, so you shouldn't just have that conversation once. You should be having them numerous times, and even if it's working, keep having them conversations. And if it's not working, definitely having them conversation.
I totally agree, mate. Let's so Rovers, I know we've obviously had Lee Brown and Tom Lockyer on this podcast, and they've spoken about how incredible those back-to-back promotion seasons were. And although that the pair of them were obviously massive parts of that, you arguably could be seen as the most important player in all of that because you put the ball in the net the most times. One of the things I want to touch on with you is that first period. I'm sat across the table from you now, looking at a very successful goal scorer, right? That's, you know, this, when you retire, Matty, you'll be able to look back and say, you know what, yeah, I've done really well. But there have been moments in your career where it's been tough for you, right? And that first 18 games, Bristol Rovers in the National League, where, you know, the lot of you are being questioned, you're supposed to, like, people are thinking before the season, oh, this team's going to win the league. I know, obviously, Daryl, from having spoken to him about it, was under pressure and tells the story of keeping all the Daryl Clark out things in his draw. You'd scored three times in 18 games or something that I've read online and were being questioned. How challenging, as we both know, Bristol Rovers is a massive football club. They were getting like 10,000 fans for a National League game. It's insane. How challenging of a time for that was that for you, as you know, as a striker, as sort of like the leading number nine of that team? And how do you think you managed to come out the other side of it?
I think firstly, I didn't realise even how big a club Rovers was, to be honest. And the gaffer and Stewie, like, obviously, first thing they said, it was like, massive club, so much potential, we want to take it here, there and everywhere. And I believed them. I had full confidence in my ability and I was ready at that moment. But yeah, when you don't get off to a good start, and you don't score in your first couple of games or whatever, and it was whatever you read there, 3-18, in a team that's just been relegated, in a massive club that is expected to run away with the league, that came with tremendous and huge pressure. And something I never had before, because I played a few times at Oxford as a young lad. No pressure, obviously. Northleigh, there was no pressure. Forest Green, there wasn't pressure like that. Just sort of what I'd put on myself, really. And then it was probably the first time, yeah, I'd had crowds of that size. And we weren't winning after 20 minutes, do you know what I mean? They were not happy. And then, yeah, I missed a couple of chances. And then every sort of chance I got after that, I'm starting thinking I need to score this. When really, just knowing what I know now, you just relax in the moment, do what you think's right. And then it's always got a chance, but you snatch your chances. And that is pressure. Do you know what I mean? That's what it was doing. Obviously, I was relieved to see like the first one went in, and then eventually, once the squad did gel together, and coming back to what I said previously, having conversations of like, this is how we're going to score goals for all our forward players. And because it was such a big turnover of players that summer, given the relegation, we was always going to get better as a side. I'm just thankful that I started scoring in the end, because they was hammering me a fair bit at the start, but they and all the Rovers fans enjoyed it by the end.
No, you scored loads of goals in the end. After, like, we were actually, you played Forest Green obviously in the playoff semis, didn't you? Beat Grimsby in the final. Because we played Grimsby in the other semi-final, that, like, Eastleigh at the time, they absolutely slapped us. I think it was 5-1 over the space of two games, and you guys obviously ended up beating Forest Green. But when you know, you're now a League One striker, right? And looking at all the statistics of your game, you've played the most times in League One and you've scored the most goals of your career in League One. You have excelled in League One. That is, like, you've just nailed it. What do you think it was about you that was able to adapt to all these different levels? And I was sort of like microwaving the 2 years where National League, you obviously scored an immense amount of goals. League Two, you scored an immense amount of goals. In that first, obviously, you left in the January, but in that first year of League One, start scoring loads of goals. Like, how do you think that you were able to continue to adapt to the rising levels as well as you were?
I don't really know. I was just full confidence, just everything. I was flying, really. Everything I was touching was going in. My teammates were all ledge. Like, it was the best group, obviously, played with on and off pitch. And I think that just conduced the best football, the best version of me. We would literally be laughing from 9 a.m. till God knows what hour, because we'd finish training, end up at Nando's, end up at someone's house. Obviously have team nights out together and stuff, and just the bond between everyone was unreal. The training room was class. The football was just, it was obviously, and this is credit to the gaffer and Stewie and all the coaching staff as well. They knew how to get the best out of all the players. Not only like my strengths, but everyone's strengths in and around the team to make it all click together. And then me being at the top end of the pitch, then he knew my strengths and obviously played up front with a few lads, but obviously Elle and Rory just were massive for me, and they scored loads of goals as well as me. And it was just a bit of everything, really. Just sort of, it was the right fit, right time, ledge group, football was great, and we just knew how to win games and score lots of goals. And if you're a fan or a player playing in that side, then it's a joy, and it doesn't surprise me now, looking back, the success we had with all those almost boxes ticked, really. And yeah, you need a little bit of luck along the way. Like when I miss a sitter and it comes in fourth round, you need a bit of luck. But no, it was just brilliant times, and yeah, great memories of it. And obviously, yeah, we're still very, very close now.
I mean, Brownie owes you a lot, really, does he? He gets a lot of credit for that goal, but no one he's never really come out and said thank you, Matty, for it in the post.
I didn't. I think I should have 1-2, Brownie. I don't know what boots I took to the game that day, but yeah, I was just buzzing to see that go in. And to be honest, what a way to finish a game. Like, it's just, I would say it won't happen again, but I think they did it last year. Season.
Yeah, they did, yeah.
But and to be honest, that was probably a game where I lost, got lost in a moment a bit for the pressure. And I don't often do that really now, but definitely that game, I think I just knew how important it was. And I think for me, when I think how important a game is, sort of, right, we're going up or not, we have to go up, I put extra pressure on myself, and then don't play as freely. But yeah, I didn't really care who scored, to be honest. And yeah, I was buzzing when we got promoted.
I think when we're trying to pick the bones out of, obviously, the information that we're withdrawing from you, Matty, is that your ability now as obviously an older pro to deal with pressure, and that journey that you've gone on in your career to understand how to deal with that, is such good advice for young players now. We were sort of probably going through similar things, as to that pressure is obviously there regardless, and you've managed to start dealing that with that by trying to almost ignore that it's even there, right? And just play as if you would, if you were playing at North Lee when you were scoring hundreds of goals. Like, it's, I think that's, you know, incredibly refreshing. I know it's difficult to do. It's sort of like I wouldn't be able to just tell myself, like, oh, it's fine, like, it's not a big deal, like, don't worry about it. Like, I'd find that super difficult, but I think the ability that you've shown to do that is quite commendable. I obviously joined Bristol Rovers in that January that you left, right? And we hadn't, like, been teammates or whatever. We played against each other loads in the National League, but I knew for, you know, the majority of that season that you were obviously scoring lots of goals and people were talking about you a lot. I think that was common within football, really. And I think, you know, a mutual friend of ours, Jamie Turley, was at Eastleigh at the time, was talking about it a lot. And so when I did join Rovers, obviously in that January, I think we played one game together. The first game I played was Fleetwood away and it didn't go particularly well. You did score. And then after that week, obviously you end up moving. I'm sure probably a lot of people will be waiting for this moment and this part of this conversation. But at what point during that season did, because League One at the time was the highest you'd played, you know, and you were doing so very successfully. At what point did moving on to the championship become a realistic possibility for you?
I think once I saw the signings in January that Daryl brought in, I knew the fullback crossing wouldn't miss again. No, I think obviously your ambition sort of change. You have sort of long term targets, and then you have shorter term sort of goals, and you keep setting them now. And I'm sure you do sort of little targets and stuff. So obviously one of my targets was to, when I was non-league, to get into the Football League, and I thought that was a massive achievement and a huge step in my career. And I was thankful that I got there in the end, to be honest. My first sort of chat to Daryl and Stewie was, they said, where do you see yourself in 5 years? And I don't know if I was trying to impress them or what, but I just said, I want to be in the championship in 5 years. I think I'm good enough. I want to get there. And that is my aim. And ever since then, and then obviously got into the league, I think then once I got into the League Two, I just got a taste for it. And I thought, this could be achievable, given the fact that the way that season went as well. I knew that there was teams sort of watching from that sort of level. Obviously, re-signed at Rovers, and I was delighted to do that and showcase my talents in League One. But yeah, I always did have a burning ambition to make it to the next level, and if I got there, I would have wanted to get to the Premier League and stuff. And just keep going. That's just how I am as a person. I'm quite driven, and I want to keep achieving and see how far and see how well a career can go, given from where I've started. So I just think the whole way along, I've just sort of taken it in my stride, but kept setting myself little targets and ticking them off as I've done them. But yeah, I think you've always got to shoot for the stars, and if you land on the moon, then you're more than happy. So I always did have that in my head at some stage. And then when the opportunity did come along, I just felt like we wasn't getting there that year. I was 26, 27 in the March. Short career, obviously. If I didn't play in it, I would have regretted it. So when obviously the opportunity arose, obviously, it was super, super late in the window, and obviously over to City, I knew it wouldn't go down well. But I think for me, I could have easily stayed, turned it down, and been a hero and etc. But the person I am, I always had that burning ambition, and if I didn't ever play in it, I would have probably regretted it, sat here today or whenever I finish, because I can tell you today, I can tell my kids, hopefully tell my grandkids, that I've not only played, but I've scored goals in the championship. I know it's not as many as I'd like, but I've done that, and I'm immensely proud of it.
Yeah, so you should be, mate. And I remember, obviously, the period of time after you'd gone, that all the lads were so happy for you. And I obviously, through them, was getting information from you as to like how it was going and stuff. But we'll get into it now. I'm not sure. Like online, I'm sort of watching interviews you've done and stuff. And when you sign for obviously Bristol City, you do an interview as to, you know, how happy you are to be there, as of course that you would do. But I don't think you've managed to or you've ever really probably given an honest account of that period of time, really. And people are going to be super interested to know. Like it was a big deal at the time, right? I didn't really understand. I knew there was a rivalry. I've grown up in Portsmouth, so that Portsmouth Southampton thing. I knew that it was huge, but at no point probably did I anticipate how difficult it was going to be for you. When the opportunity arose and somebody said to you, I don't know, like could have been your agent, said, "Look, Bristol City want to sign you." What was your immediate thoughts as to, you know, that information and how of much deliberating did you have to do to end up thinking like, you know what, I can't pass up on this. This is something that I have to do.
I was probably a bit like any other player when I found out the news. that they were interested, which was obviously super late in the window. I was a bit like, excuse me, say that again. Like, I think he said like Bristol City. And he said, yeah, what's your thoughts? Like my agent, obviously. And I was just like, oh, let me have a thing, call you back, because I was almost a bit shocked, really. Obviously, I knew of the rivalry. I'd never played in a Bristol derby, which I think would have been class, to be honest, but that didn't happen. I called him back and just sort of said, "What, like, what's the crack? Is that like, is that serious or not?" And he said, "Yeah," and yeah, it was. They said that they obviously wanted to sign me, and it was deadline day, wasn't it? So didn't have masses of time to think about it. Which I don't know if that was their tactic or not. I'm not sure. Thinking from the outside, but I literally just had to think what was best for me, my family, and just weigh up the decision, really, because I knew it wasn't going to go down well, obviously. I'm not stupid. And I loved it there. Obviously, like I said before, loved all the lads, gaffer, staff, everyone. But I was sort of getting to that point where I knew I was doing well, I knew I was scoring goals, and it felt like a bit of a now or never moment, really, if I'm honest, looking back. That was the time that you were going to probably, late as possible, get a move to the Championship. And the only other way would have been getting promoted from League One. It was obviously a stressful time given the two clubs, but I knew it upset people, but I thoroughly enjoyed my time at Bristol City. Would have liked to have played even more, scored more goals, but I ended up having a couple of operations on my hernias, a few injuries on my groins and stuff, and it was just unfortunate. Every time I'd sort of get myself back in the team and get a bit of a rhythm, my body just sort of played up and let me down. And then at that level, you can't just keep waiting and waiting and waiting. They're looking to improve squads. And I mean, I ran into some very, very good players and competing with some very good players. And now I'm looking at that squad. And I'm thinking, I played with Tammy Abraham up front. Famara Jeju, he just scored in the World Cup. Played up front with Bobby Reid, he's scoring goals in the Prem. Lee Tomlin, obviously, I know he's just retired, but what a career he's had. I was playing up front with international players, and at the time, maybe I took it for granted because I was just peak confidence and wanted to compete with these guys, and I knew I could compete with these guys if I was on top form. It was brilliant. It was brilliant. And even Josh Brown or Callum O'Dowd, that you run through that whole team. They've all gone and got some brilliant moves and had really successful careers. And, it was a pleasure to play with them, and, a great experience as well. But obviously it will always be sort of highlighted a bit more because of where I've gone from, and the goals I was scoring there. But it was great. I love both playing for Rovers and City, and the boys were great in both change rooms as well, and so was the coaching staff. I know I wanted to play more, and I was probably in the office of Lee Johnson's more than the Darrells, but coaching wise completely different coaches, and just obviously getting older now, I'm nearly finished my UEFA B now, and just seeing the sessions they take and facilities. It was a brilliant sort of time in my life, and like I said, I enjoyed both, playing for both clubs, and I don't prefer either or. You know what I mean? Yeah. I just prefer I'd enjoyed my time there, and I enjoyed my time there. And people think I don't like Rovers, but I do, and I'm thankful for every the opportunity and everything that I did, and hopefully one day, time's a bit of a healer, so hopefully one day that people, you know, reflect a bit on that and are grateful.
Yeah, I'm hoping, I'm sure they will, mate. It's actually quite refreshing, right, that you take the emotion out of it and you were in an incredibly successful Rovers team and also an incredibly successful Bristol City team, right, that I had obviously a lot of success in League Cups. You know, you've scored and set up goals against Premier League teams in those cup competitions, and everybody that I know who knows you will always say what an incredible guy and what such a great teammate you are. So obviously, you know, I touched on that all the Bristol Rovers guys were so super happy for you that you'd got the opportunity to play in the Championship, regardless of the team. And of course, like no Bristol City player, when you arrived, had a problem with you being from Rovers and you slot straight into that changing room. So, but I am aware, obviously, that supporters, it's, you know, it's going to rub people up the wrong way, right? It's just that's only natural. I'm quite interested to know, and you know, and people are probably interested that don't really understand what happened during that period of time. Like, I want to know, let's separate it from sort of like the emotion of a supporter to you as a player, right? That you had to go through all sorts in terms of like online abuse, like people posting your address of where you lived, like all that sort of stuff, which makes your life incredibly difficult to then actually go on the pitch and perform, right? So such a unique situation where, you know, I can't necessarily say to you, what advice do you have for other players who go through the same thing? Because it probably is not going to exist for many people. But being involved in hard times obviously is going to exist for players. So during that tough period of time, like people might be having, you know, relationship problems, whatever it is, you know, something's going on in their family, well, like illness, whatever it might be that they have to go through off the pitch and focus on football. Can you give us an insight into the stuff that you were dealing with off the pitch and how you were able to concentrate still on your football to be able to obviously perform at a level that you had worked so hard to get to?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I spoke to sort of four or five of the lads. I won't mention them unless they want, they might not want to be mentioned, about moving. And without, like, within a second, they all went, do it, you got to do it. Like, we're buzzing for you, like you touched on then. And because that was always a part of me. I think the people closest to me, take away all the fan stuff, I had to take the full emotion out of it, because at the end of the day, it's, you have to look at it as like a job and a career and a next step in your career. It was the people closest to me and my teammates saying to do it that gave me the belief that it was the right thing to do. So once I'd had that I was more than happy, and then I had to sit down and figure all the rest of it out. But yeah, I think in terms of obviously the move, yeah, I mean, I would have moved house anyway because there's a blue and a red side. I got a dog to walk, do you know what I mean? So yeah, I did move house. Obviously, dress got put online. Nothing happened. Like, I think my bin got nicked or even blown away in the wind. I'm not even sure. And I bumped into a lot of Rovers fans in the centre of Bristol where I was living. And they were all coming up to me, and it was all praise and all good stuff, thanking me, blah, blah, wishing me the best, which nobody hears about
because, yeah, that's nice.
I don't chat from the rooftops, same as the other bits and bobs. People read articles or read what they ever want to read, and it's like herd of sheep. You read it and you follow it, and that's what you believe it's right. But if you want to ask me what happened, the truth, what happened, I'm more than happy to say because I know what happened. But but yeah, obviously when I walked in the door, well, we just had our Christmas do, hadn't we, in Dublin.
I signed after that.
Signed, yeah, after that. And Bristol City were there for that. So Marlon and Flinty was chatting to them for a bit. And I had a bit of banter with Aaron Wilbraham. So we were like hammering each other. Anyway, signed literally a month later. So we had a mutual friend in Jermaine Easter, and I got his number the night before my first day, and I sort of said, "Oh, am I going to be all right tomorrow?" And he said, "Mate, I'll look after you. Don't you worry." So he was ledge for me, and they, all the boys, they welcomed me with open arms. I think Flint, he said, I settled quicker than snow there. So no, it was a great change room. And obviously they'd had their previous successes of getting promoted from League One, and they had sort of a core group there, which was obviously brilliant. But yeah, off the pitch, yeah, it was difficult, because I feel like maybe I was under the spotlight every week, because it was like, and especially in Bristol, and it's probably like it in other same city derbies, if one team wins and the other doesn't, because fans are all working together wherever they work, there's a common banter. Do you know what I mean?
It's like bragging rights of the weekend.
Bragging rights of the weekend, yeah, that's exactly right. So if we'd lose and Rovers would win, then it would be like, and then the spotlight was on me, obviously. And it was a bit like, because I know that the day I signed, obviously, deadline day, that Twitter went mental and with fans, do you know what I mean? And I think ultimately that is the thing that probably is the most annoying thing, really, for Rovers fans, and probably the best thing for City fans. Like, it's not obviously what you do on the pitch, it's just the bragging rights, the banter day to day, and it's like, oh, we've taken your player, etc., or blah, 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 and then it'd be like, oh, he's rubbish, he's not scored this weekend, or whatever. So definitely, it's like any place, you want to get your first goal as quick as you can. And luckily enough, I got it on my first start. So I was buzzing in that respect. And then just, yeah, obviously Championship level's a higher level. Everyone's bigger and stronger, technically, a bit better, and all them smaller improvements make it a lot harder again, like each level you go up. But yeah, one thing I did feel that when I went there, we played two up front, but I had that awful player in Tammy Abraham to dislodge. So he was the number nine. He'd scored, I don't know how many, he'd got like 25, 26 goals that season. So I was thinking, right, how am I going to get into this team? Because I'm not going to get in ahead of him, because you could see he was going to be a superstar even at that young age. So I spoke to the gaffer and said, oh, can I play sort of number 10 in behind him sort of thing, and let him be the one that stretched it and I'll sort of pick up, which was kind of like a different role to what I had been playing. But I'm a problem solver. I want to get on the pitch. I think if I can get on the pitch, I might be able to get a few goals here and there, maybe not as many. Certainly more than if I'm sat warming up or sat on the bench, whatever. So that was how I got into the team. And obviously we were down the bottom. We needed wins, and we started winning games, and that is how I first got in the team. And I think in those last sort of, I don't know if it was 15 games, I think I started 9, scored 2 and got 7 assists. So I was like, I'm contributing to the team, maybe in a slightly different way than what I wanted. I'd prefer if those were the opposite way around. But I was enjoying it. I was doing well. I was playing Championship football. So I was buzzing. But yeah, there was always, what I said before, there was always sort of that slightly extra pressure from the move, basically. But I think what had helped me in that respect was all the like abuse I got in the start of like my Rovers period helped me become maybe a bit more thick skinned. And definitely today, I mean, I get called all sorts on the pitch, so and it doesn't affect me, believe it or not. So I'm just, you know, I'm like if I can wind someone up, whether it be a player or a fan, I'll do it. But once the game's over, it's done. I'm a completely different person. I'm actually a nice guy, believe it or not. But yeah, on the pitch, you do what it takes to win. And that comes back to what I said at the start of the chat. And I want to win the game. I want to go home happy. I don't want to lose the game and let other teams, fans, players go home happy. So yeah, it was added pressure. I rambled on a bit then. But there was definitely added pressure. And yeah, probably some games I dealt with it better than others, but each week it got a bit easier and a bit better for me.
You certainly do have that bite about you, mate, in sort of that winning mentality, don't you? But the what I obviously just took out of what you said there is trying to relate it back to football and what people can learn from you and take away really from these conversations is that you went into a team that you saw was going to be difficult to get in terms of Tammy Abraham playing that number nine position and something you thought was going to be tough to take him out of the team instead of you. What you did was think about how you could add value to that team in a different way. And a lot of people wouldn't necessarily do that. They just think, oh, I'm better than him and start bitching about Tammy Abraham behind his back and going to see the manager. And instead of saying, how can I get into this team? Telling him like, I should be in this team, which is a completely different mindset. And you know, you didn't do that. I think it's quite a measure of you really as a person and as a player. How important do you think that you trying to take a little bit of a step back, understand your game, understand the way that you could add value to that team in a different way than what you had done previously was important really to your, well, obviously to you getting in the team was super important, but how much or really what I'm trying to get at is how important do you think that is for people to be able to do who are in a similar situation?
Yeah, I think it's massively important. I think if you ask every footballer up and down the country, you're happiest when you're on the pitch playing, whether that is highlighting your strengths or not. You think and you know you can make an impact to the game when you're on the pitch rather than when you're not. So, I mean, the first and foremost, you want to get in any side. If you're not in the side, you want to get in the side. And then, yeah, if you kind of are settled in that side and you've kind of proven your worth, maybe if that makes sense, you can then maybe start orchestrating how your teammates in and around you and stuff. And if you're settled to produce even better performances. But I think when you've just signed somewhere, you kind of almost earn your stripes a little bit, prove to your teammates how good you are. And I thought at that time, the best way for me to do that was to get on the pitch, whether that be in a slightly different role, because I played it for a lot of the duration I was there. But then is that, you could argue, is that me adapting to the level because I'm not super, super quick, where the players start to become physically a little bit quicker, a bit stronger. I'd like to think I'm mentally and got a good football brain so I can see pockets and drift into them. And in the Championship, there are sort of those areas where you can pick it up. You maybe hurt them in a different way. You're looking for that next pass. But it all interlinks, really. I think I wouldn't have been able to do that if I didn't hone my skills at Forest Green. If I'd have just been a goal scorer, I probably wouldn't have even had the conversation with the gaffer because I wouldn't even known I could do it. But I know stuff to my game that maybe people and managers don't even see on a Saturday because I'm not showing them because I don't need to. That's the way I want to play and that is how my manager wants me to play and how my teammates want me to play, and it's getting me more goals, which is great. But you can do things and help the team in different ways. I think one rotation, for example, I think I rotated with the midfield too and I ended up getting the ball off a goalie to feet. And I'm 30 yards from my goal. I'm thinking, I've been told I'm a fox in the box my whole life, yet I've just done this. And then I rolled it out to left back and just ran forward. And I'm like, it's all new things. And that's why I say I loved it, because I learned new things, lots and lots of new things. And just ways of playing. And you're constantly learning as a person in whatever walk of life. But I was learning as a player and trying to get even better as a player. Like, I didn't want to stop there. When I was there, I wanted to get into the Premier League and then I think I would have just called it a day. It was a bit over for me, but I'd have been buzzing and we weren't too far away.
We weren't far off, one year
at Christmas, and I think we finished eighth for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. So we wasn't far away. Maybe should have snuck in the playoffs 1 year, but finish where you finish at the end of the day. But I loved it, and I use those skills now. And then obviously the older you get, you do, obviously I will start losing little bits of speed and agility as years go by. That's just father time for you, but it will help me in the long run. I think that there's more strings to my belt. I think, yeah.
So we, you know, fast forwarding a little bit, mate, because as you say, you, in the end, probably in that championship with Bristol City, you probably fell victim to being injured, getting fit. And in the end, obviously, as you say, football moves so quickly that sometimes a manager or a team can't wait, especially at that level, can't wait for you to get fit. They need someone. And by the time you are fit, the whole picture of the team has changed, right? So you end up going to Oxford on loan back in League One. You signed for them permanently. You've been there for a while now. You've played the most amount of games that you've ever played for anyone at Oxford. Scored loads of goals. You know, the numbers here of 160 appearances and 64 goals, 20 assists. Sort of like the numbers are incredibly impressive. What do you think it is about League One? Because when I've scrolled down here and we've got like the amount of goals that you've scored in each level, right? And you've scored 70 goals in League One, 50 goals in the National League, 6 in the Champ, 27 in League Two. So, I mean, your numbers are insane. But in League One specifically, where you've played most of your football, you just seem to be able to find the net a lot. What do you think it is about League One that's allowed you to excel so much?
I'm not really sure, to be honest. Just the first year I come in, give me tremendous confidence because I hit the ground running. Normally, I'm a bit of a late starter in seasons. August normally a write-off for me, to be honest. I think I made a joke about it when I think it was this year.
Harry Kane was the same for a while, wasn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, that's where I heard it from. But yeah, I don't know if it's enjoying my summers a bit too much, start a bit late. But yeah, I think I hit that year in League One, even though I'd had a short pre-season, I hit the ground running. And I think that just gave me tremendous belief that I can do it at this level, first and foremost. So obviously, then after I got the move and then dropped back down, I already know I can do it at that level. And I just felt comfortable, really. I just kind of knew where to get chances, where the goals were in this league. And I think they do vary a little bit. Like at times, certainly in the Championship, they're kind of a bit tighter games, aren't they? And sometimes a set piece opens up the game and stuff. But yeah, no, League One just had full confidence really in myself to get goals. And then thankfully I walked into a side that was unbelievable. The football we were playing was tremendous. That was obviously part of the reason of going there, not only being from Oxford and always wanting to go back there one day, to be honest, and kind of do what I wasn't allowed to do when I was younger, and that was play for Oxford properly and score goals, as many goals as I can. And the stats were excited me when I was speaking to the manager. I think the game before I signed, that they had 25 crosses against Blackpool, and I feed off crosses, and they were showing me where they were and stuff like that. And I just thought there's goals there. It seemed the perfect fit. And we should have got promoted, really. And obviously that was the COVID year, but got cut short. And then even in the playoff final, I feel like we should have won it. That's probably, one of the biggest regrets in my career, really, not winning that game. Would have been an unbelievable achievement, and given it being my hometown club. But we bounced back, made the playoffs again next year. That was hard, run into a good Blackpool side, obviously, just happens. It's been good. It's been really good. And I've loved every minute of playing for Oxford, and the boys are tremendous. Like the whole setup, the staff, amazing. It was like going in a time machine when I first signed there, and I was not seeing them for 10 years, and some of them look the same. Some of them had got a few more grey hairs. I won't obviously mention any names. I know who they are. It was just amazing. And just to be back playing in yellow and in my home shirt. And the first goal was obviously amazing because I hadn't scored previous to that. And yeah, I'm just enjoying every second, and I'll keep enjoying it for as long as I'm playing for Oxford.
To finish this off, Matty, you know, the one question that I do have for you is, what do you think the best version of yourself looks like? And what did you have to do to get there in terms of like your training preparation? Like if you're thinking back as the best version of yourself, what was this game look like? How do you look physically?
I think obviously depending on week to week, what game it is in terms of like what load you've had and stuff. Like obviously I know there's loads of Saturday, Tuesday games and stuff. I've always liked a night game, to be honest. The cool coolness and fresh air, I always seem to like the night games. But week to week, if it's a Saturday, I think definitely like a hard week's training of competitive training, where there's sort of forfeits on losing five-a-side teams, so that it gets me to that. Like I'm light-hearted, jovial character, like joking around. But when I step onto that pitch, I need to be playing on the edge and almost angry. And obviously, there's a fine line. You don't want to step over the line and do something stupid and stuff. But I feel like that gives me that adrenaline rush and that extra energy and extra strength, whether I'm pinning someone, or extra desire to get a through ball or whatever. If I'm playing in that mental state, I definitely think that sort of gets me to the best version of myself. And then just doing lots of finishing drills throughout the week, having a good warm up on that day, and lots of sort of touches in the warm up. Then I know I'm on it and I'm ready to go. And yeah, when you feel like that, I know you can't feel like that all the time. I wish you could, but when you feel like that, I feel like unstoppable, and I just kind of have that confidence I'm going to score. So that's probably the best way I can describe that, really. But yeah, when you feel like that, and if you feeling like that as a striker, then you're just ready to go. You cannot wait to step onto the field, and you're just waiting and ready for that one chance, and you'll be ready to take it. You know you are.
Incredible advice, mate. I think there's so many takeaways actually throughout this whole conversation when people listen to it back. I'd imagine quite a lot of supporters of, you know, of Bristol Rovers, possibly Oxford and Bristol City will listen to this, as you know, from a fan's perspective. But from a player's perspective, the things that you've spoken about obviously in this conversation are massive, really, in terms of people's development, being able to deal with pressure, and specifically for strikers, as to, you know, how they can perform their best on a match day. The one thing that's sticking out in my mind, that if I was a striker, is you've spoken about that three, like within a split second, trying to have three different options as to how you're going to finish, and then obviously just picking one in the space of a millisecond. And that possibly, you know, I think coming away from this, that's incredibly good information from somebody who scored so many goals for people who were trying to replicate what you've done. But firstly, I want to say thank you for allowing me into your home. Secondly, thank you for being so honest with me about, you know, probably challenging subjects that you may or may not have given your honest opinion on in the past. And three, for your advice, really, for people listening. This podcast is all about how people can improve their own football games. And I think the information that you've given people in this conversation is going to absolutely help people do that. It's going to absolutely help people do that.
No, thank you, mate. It's always a pleasure. And yeah, if any people listening helps them out just that one little bit, then obviously it's done its job. And it's a pleasure to see you, mate. Good catch up.
Thanks, mate.